Good evening. Is there anyone here for the first time tonight? Welcome. We just finished a five-day sesshin on Monday, so I wanted to share a few thoughts about sesshin in general and my sesshin that I experienced with this body and mind in particular. Sesshin is a one or two or three or five or 7 day meditation retreat where we do a lot of sitting and reflecting, and interspersed in the sitting and walking meditation, of course, are meals and breaks and at least one lecture a day. So it's a little bit of a more intense meditation practice than our usual daily 40-minute sits here that a lot of us just did before lecture. It gives us a time to settle our bodies, to quiet our minds, maybe a little bit more than just one 40-minute period. The sesshin or meditation retreat is modeled after Buddha's 6 days of intense sitting where he sat down and said, "I'm not getting up until I realize the way, until I have a little understanding of reality." And then in Buddha's time, the wandering monks got together seasonally, depending on the rains and the monsoons. A lot of them were walking by themselves or in small groups for most of the time, but a couple of times a year, depending on the weather, they would all get together and practice together, usually meditation together. So that kind of looked like our sesshins that we're doing today, all the monks coming together from the different corners of town and gathering together under the forest canopy of Santa Cruz Zen Center to escape the sunshine and sunburn rather than the monsoon rains. So this is a tradition that that monks in most of the Buddhist traditions have kept up, this getting together on a periodic basis for several days at a time and meditating together. Buddha sat for 6 days and saw the morning star and experienced an intense connection, non-separability between himself and that distant star. And his awakening was that unity of all the universe, the single field of no separation, all are one in this universe. And he taught this interconnectedness of all things for the next 40 years. We studied his awakening story in this Sesshin, and it said he was never alone for the next 40 years because he was just teaching this Dharma, this path of non-duality, of not being separate from each other or the rest of the universe. He himself said he taught liberation from suffering, and that when you were able to put down this idea of a separate self, a separate unique self that's different from all others, when you were able to put that down and realize this unity, this connection, that was liberation. That this separate self with all of its desires, its peculiarities, its likes and its dislikes, was suffering. And when we could let go of grasping onto those likes and dislikes and realize our intimacy with the rest of the universe, that was the end of suffering, and that was liberation. Dogen was the founder of this Soto Zen school in Japan, and our Zen ancestor in the early 1200s. And he felt that this liberation came about with our sitting meditation, as did the Buddha. And in our sitting meditation, when we could drop away this body and mind, when we could follow our breath, and then just forget the breath, and just realize our intimacy with the rest of the universe, that was our enlightenment, that was our liberation. So that sitting meditation really is of prime importance in the Soto Zen school of the tradition that we follow here. And in that meditation, we might see how our conventional lives of, getting up with the alarm clock and maybe coming to sit here at the Zendo and then going off to work or school or taking care of our families, our conventional life, was not separate from that big, intimate, interconnected universe that we are always a part of. And that when we can remember that connection between our conventional life and ultimate reality, that's our liberation, that's our freedom and our enlightenment. A little holding on to this self a little less tightly, so that we are aware of our bigger bodies that fill the whole universe. That's our life. That non-duality between our everyday conventional life and the big mind and body that we are inhabiting at all times. So Sesshin here usually goes from 5 in the morning till 9 at night. We sit and walk a couple of times and then have breakfast and a little break. We'll sit and walk a couple of times after the break and listen to a lecture followed by a little more sitting and walking, and then lunchtime and a break. After lunch, there's usually a short work period where we clean up around the center and then get back to sitting and walking meditation again before dinner, and a break. And then we'll close the day with a little more sitting and walking. We do services, chanting and bowing before each meal and at the end of the day. And we generally keep that routine through the whole sesshin, so that we just give ourselves over to the schedule. We don't have to think, you know, what do I want to do now? We just pay attention to the schedule during the day and sit and walk and eat with everybody else. So we give ourselves a little bit of a break from the picking and choosing what we're going to do each day. We kind of just let that go a little bit. Catherine Thanis, the abbot of Santa Cruz Zen Center, who died 3 years ago at sesshin, says, isn't it wonderful just to give your mind a little break in sesshin like this, where you're not having to pick and choose and decide and plan? You just come here and sit and follow your breath and not have to, and give your mind a little break from all of the work that it's usually required to do. One of Buddha's early sutras, the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, what does it say, George? We calm our bodily formations. So our mind is getting stiller, more still, and our bodies are just settling in. The aches and pains that we might feel in the first few days might get a little better in the last few days, might go more in the background. And you just settle in for the 1, the 2, the 3, the 5, or the 7 days. Dogen said of our meditation, to study Buddhism is to study the self. So we sit here in our 40-minute period just a little bit ago, as well as each 40-minute period in sesshin, and follow our breath. And the thoughts that come up is who we are, and we look at that. And instead of going with those thoughts, like, what am I going to do about this relationship? I don't know if it's working for me. Instead of just going and going, you just kind of open your hand, of thought. That's what one modern teacher called it. You just don't hold on to that thought. You just open it up, let that thought go out like a cloud through the empty sky, and you get back to your breath and your body. You get back in your straight spined posture once again and follow your breath. So you're learning about yourself and your relationship, and you're treating it in a little different way without holding on, without practicing an idea over and over again about what to do about this or that. You're visiting those thoughts, or those thoughts are visiting your meditation, and you let them go and get back into your body and breath. So Dogen says, to study Buddhism is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. Forgetting the self is that opening the hand of thought, letting that fixed idea go. And then Dogen says, by forgetting yourself, you and 10,000 things awaken. That when you're not meeting every thought, every idea about the temperature in the room, every idea about are the lights too bright, are the lights too dim, if you're not meeting everything with an opinion, something you've already thought about, you become a little bit more intimate with it. You are enacting that intimacy. It's getting a little closer to you because you're not fending it off with a thought. And you're enacting that interconnectedness with the morning star, that bright light that fills the whole universe. You're a little more intimate with that as you follow your breath and let those thoughts go. So this is an effective meditation technique. Forgetting the self and being awakened along with 10,000 things. It works pretty good in a 40-minute meditation period. And one might get really good at it in 5 days of just letting those thoughts go. And that's why we practice this way, to see if we can't settle our minds and bodies and experience again and again Buddha's enlightenment, being filled with the illumination of the morning star, which is our true face, which is our own true light. And at the same time, the bell will ring in 40 minutes, and this conventional body and mind, the same old body and mind that we had when we first sat down, is going to get up and do some walking around the room, or get up and enjoy lunch. So we enact this harmony of our conventional bodies and minds and the luminous, interconnected universe that we are at all times, right here in Sesshin. A monk from Green Gulch, Jiryu, gave a talk last week about meditation. And he talked about this meditation, this posture, this mind, being the mind and body of Buddha, being the Dharmakaya, the reality body. This is Buddha's reality body as we sit here in this straight-spined posture, staying close to our body and mind. We have to have confidence, I think, that we really are the reality body of the Buddha as we sit here. It might not feel like that the first few times we sit. We might be squirming around trying to get comfortable. We might have so much going on in our lives that it's really hard to let go of those thoughts. And at the end of the 40 minutes, we might say to ourselves, I can't imagine that the Buddha has been thinking about this for 40 minutes. But in these 40 minutes or in these 3 or 4 or 5 days of meditation, we might have a still mind and body where we sit here and say, you know, I could sit here forever. Things are going pretty good right here. I don't care if the bell rings. I don't care that there's a little dull ache in my knees or my back. I enjoy just breathing in, breathing out, being in my body. I've got things squared away at home and at work. I don't have anything to worry about. I can just sit here. And it's my experience, a time or two in a 40-minute period, or a time or two maybe in a whole day of meditation, that feeling nurtures me. It nurtures me enough that I want to try again. I want to sit down for the next period of meditation, or I want to sign up again for the next meditation retreat that comes along. It feels that this is the food I need to sustain me, to help me remember that bigger body that fills the universe, that is the universe all the time, that some teachers say is really our true home, and that when we get an idea that meditation is good for us, or that might be good for us, it's because it feels like we're coming back to that true home and our true body, which is that bigger, spacious, timeless body that fills the universe. And even if it does just come up a little here, a little there in this meditation or in a 5-day sesshin, it's like food for me. I want to remember that again. I want to experience my true body, my true face, my original face, it's sometimes called. We even get glimpses of that in our conventional life. When we're on Pacific Avenue, for instance, and we might see a young child do something cute, we feel connected to that little stranger. It seems that that even though we don't know that little stranger, that's part of our condition. And we get this glimpse that all of us wandering up and down Pacific Avenue might be connected in this way. That's we're demonstrating that humanness that is not individual, but something that we all intimately share. So we even moments like that open our hearts, fills us with a larger sense of body, and sustains us a little bit. And it too is pretty brief. And yet, you know, we want to go out and be with people again and again, for just that reason, just to feel our connections, even in a room full of, even in a room full of strangers. Sasheen is a little different than our 40-minute period that we offer here. Three times a day we have an opportunity to come here and sit 40 minutes. Sasheen we do a little different. It's a real commitment to the day. Dogen asks us to set aside our worldly affairs before we come to the Zendo here. So we kind of clean the slate. We bring our whole selves here when we come to Sasheen. I think that's pretty unique. You know, even when I go to work, you know, which pretty much fills a day, you know, I've got phone calls to make during the lunch hour. I've got things to do after work, so I have to get out of work at a certain time to be there on time. I'm kind of bringing in a whole lot of things, even though I'm spending 8 hours there at work. I've got a lot of other things, a lot of other agendas that have to be done throughout the days, even though most of it is there at work. But when we come to Sasheen, we have set aside these worldly affairs, and we just give ourselves over to the schedule that starts at 5 a.m. and ends at 9:00. And we do this practice wholeheartedly, almost because there's nothing but our wholeness here that we're doing this meditation. And so it's unique that we can set aside these worldly affairs so completely the way we do in Sasheen. So right from the beginning, we can put our whole bodies and minds into this posture, into this breath and body, letting our thoughts go. We can do it wholeheartedly, and we can do it completely in a way that we sometimes can't do in shorter periods of meditation, and almost impossible to do, say, during an 8-hour workday when we're pulled in so many directions. There's a certain wholeness here in Sasheen that's very unique. Somebody in Sasheen was talking about the precepts. And this is the ethical teachings of the Buddha. And how is this enacted? If sitting is what we do here in the Soto school, what does that have to do with the ethics that we practice when we're out in the world, with at work and with our families and with our friends? And this too gets back to the confidence that we develop that this posture and this mind is the mind and body of Buddha, that enacts the 16 precepts, the 16 ethical precepts, sitting here following the breath, filling the universe, doing no harm, when we fill the universe with our bodies and minds, what room is there for falsehoods? What room is there for something that's true and something that's false when we fill up this whole universe with our bodies and minds? And then when the bell rings and we say goodbye to each other, and we're back at work the next day, we remember that large body and mind over and over again, reinforcing the precepts in our life. Do you need this water, Nanette? Reb Anderson, in his book on the precepts, says that actually there is just one precept. We might study 16 of them, but there's just one precept, and that's to be Buddha. And as Jiryu said, we are Buddha in this posture, in this body and mind, and we are this Buddha as we are working at the county or in the schools or at home or with our families. And sitting, Suzuki asks us to try to be Buddha and sit in this posture at least once a day, so that we can remember that we're Buddha and that we fill the universe all day long. This meditation practice that we do is considered our wisdom practice, where we remember that there's no separation between self and other, there's no subject and object. There is just us continually letting go of those thoughts, coming back to this big body and mind that's filling the universe. And as thoughts come up again, oh, there's this body having a thought out there. We let that thought go and we come back to the wisdom of no subject and object. We also say that this wisdom practice is our compassion practice. And when we're out there on Pacific feeling that connection with the young child and with all the people walking up and down the streets, it's our heart that's opening to include all other beings. We feel that connection, that human connection with all others, and we feel this compassion, the space between us and all the other people is getting smaller, and we're saying, yes, I know that child mind. Yes, I know that shopping mind. Yes, I know that cafe lunch mind. That's part of being human. And in our conventional life, that intimacy, that oneness with all there is around us is expressed as compassion. And we say that compassion and wisdom are the same thing, two sides of that same coin. And as a matter of fact, when we're sitting here in Sesshin, or maybe even in our 40-minute period just before lecture, maybe we're sitting with strangers and we feel pretty good about that. You know, I don't know the person next to me, but I have this feeling that thoughts are coming up and they're letting them go and coming back to their breath, and they're practicing being in accord, being in harmony, being intimate with everything that's going on right now here in the room and in the universe. And I'm doing that too. I'm feeling pretty good about that person. We're looking at the world. We're expressing our true natures. We're remembering our true natures in the same way. I'm feeling pretty good about that. So in our meditation and in Sesshin, compassion comes up during this wisdom practice. And I've never been in a Sesshin that we didn't all feel pretty good about each other at the end, and we wanted to talk about it. We wanted to know what others' experience were. We felt like we knew each other. We had a nice. You remember this weekend, or these last 5 days have been so nice. We ended with a meal out on the patio, a little sun-dappled meal of leftovers, soups and salads and grains and potatoes, and it was quite a feast, like in the Harry Potter movies, where the tables are just filled with all the bounty of the universe. We forget completely that we were cursing them while they were coughing, you know, during meditation. All of that is forgotten, and we're just saying, you know, we all did this. We're all looking at reality in the same way, in the same posture. And I feel pretty good about you guys. It's a pretty still, spacious, warm, and compassionate environment during Sesshins. Even some of those periods in the hot afternoon where I just have to think about that relationship again, and it won't leave. When that bell rings, I'm up, I'm shaking out my legs, and it's on to the next thing. Even that old thought that keeps coming up gets held and treated a little differently in Sesshin. The bell rings, and it kind of rolls off our body as we get up and fluff the cushion. So that's how we can keep generating this wisdom practice and this compassion practice over and over again. 40 minutes here, 10 minutes here, a good meal there, and we've remembered and been nurtured over and over again by this body and mind of Buddha. Maybe I can end there. People can remember their sesshins, or have questions about sesshins or retreats, or have questions about this meditation and our wisdom and compassion practice. We've got a few minutes before we take a break. Edie.
Well, I was listening to Catherine the other day, and she talked about being in Sesshin with somebody who was fidgety and noisy, and sitting next to this person, and how encouraging it was for her to sit next to someone who makes noise, who can't settle in their seat. And I never thought of it that way before until I heard that. It was her describing it as encouragement for her to be settled, for her to be quiet.
She was a realized being, that Catherine. You know, with the compassion that she may have generated, with her, you know, oh, I know that. I remember being uncomfortable. I've been here a lot of sesshins, but you know, when my back goes out, I'm miserable. I'm that squirming person. And so it's easy for all of us to remember, oh, I know that body. I know that body. I can have compassion for that body. And I remember the first seven-day sesshin I did. I happened to be at Tassajara. And on one side of me was this person who sat like a tin soldier for 7 days. I didn't see him move once or cough once. He was just this rigid soldier. And on the other side was this person who was rocking back and forth and standing up, you know, swinging their legs around and standing up, just miserable for the 7 days. And it was still a great sesshin. That was about 20 years ago. It was, you know, because I'd never sat that long before, it had this profound effect on me, even though I was frequently distracted, and even though I would distract myself by saying, I could never sit as solidly as this person next to me. The person who was flailing back and forth for that whole sesshin is now the practice leader at Tassajara. His body and mind is not the same body and mind that it was 20 years ago, and maybe he even had a great 7-day sesshin. I want to do this again. I think it got better. Maybe that's what he said to himself. I really liked that. I really liked that. So yes, great compassion. We all met Catherine's compassionate heart. Thank you. Nanette, you had a question.
Yeah, it's kind of like a big question for the end of the evening, but this teaching over the years that I've heard so much, sometimes there's some way that it makes sense to me, but tonight, not. Which is the whole phenomenal world expressing the Buddha's seal in a moment of my zazen. You know, this idea that in a moment of zazen, the whole universe somehow is there. Tonight, I have no idea what that means. So I wondered if you wanted to say something.
Maybe Lex Hickson will answer that question. This is the companion book that I use when I read the Transmission of Light. This is Lex Hickson studied each one of the Buddha's stories mentioned in the Transmission of Light. 52 of them, 52 Buddhas, starting with Shakyamuni. He studied each one of those stories and then wrote his own riff on how each story affected him. He died recently, but he is a student of Maizumi Roshi and Bernie Glassman, and studied with them. But he was, in this story on Shakyamuni Buddha, he was commenting on that it was said that Shakyamuni was never alone for 40 years. Never alone. This means oneness. There is nothing separate to be known. No one separate to perform the act of knowing. Great compassion is simply the absence of separateness. This unique compassion without subject or object springs forth instantly from the realization of non-duality. Utter inclusiveness. So I remembered that one when you asked your question. How can all those 10,000 things out there also realize the harmony and unity of the universe right along with me? Is that your question? So I think it's that feeling that that young person that you feel so instantly connected with when they're doing some goofy thing on Pacific Avenue. It's your memory that I'm connected here. And as a matter of fact, the reality of the whole universe is connected and intimate and not separate. Great compassion is no separation. And so when you remember that reality, when you look out at the rest of the people on Pacific Avenue, all you see is this oneness. The universe is no other way. All those 10,000 things are right then their true body, which is the wholeness and fullness and the unity and non-separation of the universe. So I don't think it's like everybody has the same idea all of a sudden that they're connected. As a matter of fact, you're not having an idea at all. You're having an experience of the reality of the whole universe, which is oneness. And all those 10,000 things, those 10,000 people are just one reality. And I think that's what it means when you, dropping body and mind, forgetting the self, you and 10,000 things, all are liberated, is that you're right there in the unity, the reality of the universe. I think that's what that means.
What I hear you saying is like just a moment of being awake to the fact that that's already true.
Yeah.
That unity is already true. It kind of, what I thought of when you were talking is you are not it in truth, it is you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Because thank you.
Last question? Stan.
This is not a question, but I have been reading a book on, it's called Mindful Revolution. And you quoted Suzuki Roshi as talking about the cancer he was dying with a smile as my little friend. Because he was so realizing it was just part of the process and and that's how we saw it, and that's how we practiced with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great compassion, great understanding, great wisdom.
Mm-hmm. He didn't say it just once. He would say it to people when they were there concerned about it. So, well, that's just my little friend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
May our meditation remind us of our true body, our true face filling the universe, intimate with all beings. And may we remember this endlessly. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible.